education, informational hearing. Rep Comp, let me pass the gavel over to you, and you can run the section of the meeting on the Kids Project, please.
Well, Chair Buckley, what a actually a surprise, but thank you. I am a person that is am used to using data in order to look at school improvement plans, using data to monitor everything that we're supposed to with No Child Left Behind. And so when I learned a little bit more about the integrated, what is it, kids program, I thought it might be worthy of our time just to spend as much time as you want to give to this. There's no demands or requirements here, but to ask some questions about what student information system is working on and how it might be helpful to schools in the future. And with that, I asked Doug Costi, who is helping formulate this process. We just, on the department's budget that we passed last week, I believe there's almost a $9 million assistance here to complete this program, or fairly much completed. And the only thing that you might start with is when you started and when you plan on finishing. But with that committee, I would hope you're as interested in this as I am a little bit.
Very good. Vice Chair Comp, members of the committee, for your record, my name is Doug Costi. I'm the Assistant Superintendent of the Department of Assessment and Information Service, Office of Assessment and Information Services in the Department of Education. With me today is Scott Robinson. Scott is the Chief Technology Officer for Portland Public Schools and is one of the pilot districts that has been participating in this project with us. And I've asked Scott to attend so that he can help summarize at the end of the presentation what happened from his perspective as a district, why this is important to school districts across the state, and give you a better picture rather than just hearing from the department why this is a good idea. So what we did, essentially this project was funded out of the 05 legislature for 05-07, and in about 18 months we pulled together four districts that were piloting data warehouses. We created an exchange mechanism and the definition for what a student transcript would look like and the ability to move those data between schools and districts. We created a standardized data dictionary, which did not yet exist, for student-level information. Currently, data are stored in what we refer to as transactional systems, and they vary from instance to instance or school to school. They pretty much predefine them, and then they have to do what we refer to as a crosswalk to standardize those data to report to the state. So there's some processing that has to go along. So to get everybody on a single data dictionary is a big deal for us. We were able to create a state data warehouse to pull this information into. We created 45 web-based reports, and I'll show you what those look like, and a dashboard with key performance indicators that are aligned to our ODEs, the Enterprise of Education's performance measures. So at a state level, we can see where we're at in a striving or achieving our performance measures. And finally, as part of the pilot process and project, we identified some key issues and lessons learned for going forward with this project in 07-09 to really blow this thing out statewide to get every student in the state represented by a data warehouse. So what I'm going to show you on the next slide is kind of an eye chart, but I think it's important to note here that this is the technical architecture or the foundation for pulling all of the hardware together and making it talk to one another. So you can see in the upper left-hand corner there's a diagram that's referred to as the transactional system. Those are the various student information systems that are in place across the state. You can see that those various student information systems feed a data warehouse. Those are what we refer to as regional data warehouses. That's what Scott and the others in the various pilots are building From there, the dotted lines and the yellow diagrams are what we refer to as the operational data store. That's when the state steps in and gets a hold of the data at the district level, student level information, create the standard for data and the transcript so that we can create this mechanism to move the kids' reports around the enterprise in a timely fashion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Bailey.
I'm sorry. May I ask you a question?
Absolutely. Well, Doug, are you okay with questions?
Absolutely.
If my eyes are seeing your eye chart correctly, those are two-way arrows?
Yes, they are.
What are the needs for going from the data warehouse back to the system itself? I assume that's not a No. That's not sending reports back. That's a different place, right?
Vice Chair Comp and Representative Greenlick, it is a two-way arrow, and you're seeing it correctly. And the reason it's a two-way arrow is because of FERPA considerations, the state cannot is the Family Educational Right to Privacy Act. The state does not have the authority to release district-level information without the acknowledgement of the districts. So what that dual arrow represents is a confirmation that a request has been made by a district to request student records from another district. So if Johnny moves from Portland to Beaverton, Beaverton would request records from Portland. They would send a message, and that's why those are two-way.
Right. But that's not the report writing.
No, it's not the report.
We'll have that in a bit.
Yeah, we'll see that in a bit.
Well, did you have a follow-up or anything?
No, okay. That's fine. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It also represents assessment data going out to them after you've collected it, does it not?
Vice Chair Comp, Representative Roblin, that will do that in the future. That is not in the pilot phase at this point in time. So to continue, what you see in the middle is actually the kids' data warehouse. That's the state level view of the data. And the one thing that's important to note in that is all identifiable student information has been stripped from it. So we don't know who these kids are once they land into the state-level data warehouse. That's very, very important for us to be able to mask the identity of the individual students. Those student IDs are kept at the operational data store level and within the regional warehouses. What that allows us to do is report in aggregate using the foundational data, the data about the kids, and be able to make good policy decisions, et cetera, from those data without looking at individual kids. Yet those data are longitudinally aligned, which means that Johnny's records, as Johnny moves through the system, are linked with a special identifier so that we can track the individual kids, even though we don't know who they are, as we progress through the system. So we can have a look back in history about what programs these kids were involved in, did it make a difference, and we don't have the limitation as we did in the past of looking at just district to district to district, because as those kids move around the districts, you lose their identity and the ability to look at the program and to evaluate the success or not of each individual program.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
Again,
Greenlick.
Thank you, ma'am. That's the bottom data file. Are you talking about not the one in the middle?
Vice Chair Comp, Representative Greenlick, no, I'm talking about the big canister in the middle. That's the kids' data warehouse.
Well, then I have a question about that. You said that, let's say Eugene wanted to inquire about an individual. You said you would tell Hillsborough if they were doing that. How could you give Eugene information about an individual if you don't have the personal identifiers
of
that?
Good question, Vice Chair Comp, Representative Greenlick. If Eugene is asking for a Hillsborough child's records, the first request is, did Johnny reside there, and could we have the information? The return arrow says, yeah, we have it. We're going to validate it, and we'll get back to you. That goes back to the Eugene district. Then Hillsborough gathers the data, looks at it, says, okay, it's ready for us to transfer to Hillsborough. Uh-huh. At that point in time, the records are transferred to Hillsborough. The state doesn't do that. We just provide the mechanism to allow the transfer of those records.
But Hillsborough does that data out of their data system up on the left or out of the central warehouse?
Hillsborough does theirs out of the data system up in the left. See the little container that says District Data Warehouse?
Yeah.
That's where Johnny's records are contained. So when they're ready to send those records to Eugene, the records will be extracted from their data warehouse and put into the operational data store and then moved over to Eugene's server.
Why do you need to get between them if it's just data they have?
Can I help with that? I have a question, maybe, because this is what I'm thinking about, a possible why. Doug, so let's say we want to, out of the ODE major cylinder in the middle, we ask you as legislators how many special education students are in this pilot project.
Mm-hmm.
And then we want a subset of that. We want to know how many are in first grade and how many of them have autism.
Well, that's not my question. I understand.
That's not? Okay.
No, my question is, Hillsborough, Eugene wants to know about John J. Jones.
Right.
About that person's data. They go over to the middle and they say, well, we don't have it, of course, because we don't have it identified, but we'll send it over to Hillsborough and ask them. So they send it up to Hillsborough and ask them, can you send us John J. Jones's data so we can send it to Eugene? So my question is, why would they go through you to get that? Because you don't have it.
Vice Chair Comp, Representative Greenlick, no, you're exactly right. They wouldn't go to us. Our job here is to create the infrastructure to support the request and the acknowledgement, the handshake, if you will, and the movement of data between instances.
Okay. So they would be asking Hillsborough directly.
Exactly.
There needs to be an arrow between Hillsborough and Eugene, then, right?
Well, that's represented by those dotted lines between the servers. So that's what we refer to as
the
handshake.
In the yellow squares? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. The only reason that you're involved in this transaction at all is that there is a new personally identifiable number that they have, that they want to make sure transfers with that kid to Hillsborough so they still are tracking that same child, and that they don't come up with a new number, correct?
Vice Chair Comp, Representative Roblin, kind of. primarily,
that's why we're meeting today.
What our role is to facilitate the exchange.
Okay.
We didn't want to see 10 or 20 different data warehouses created and 10 or 20 different ways of exchanging those data created. It makes sense to have an enterprise approach to this so that it's done one time and not replicated.
Vice Chair Comp and Representative Roblin, if I could add to that from a district perspective for just
could
a moment.
Could you say your name for the record?
I'm Scott Robinson, Chief Technology Officer for Portland Public Schools. Just wanted to add briefly a district perspective possibly that might assist. If you look at data exchanges that happen between districts today, while the kind of elements that one would expect to exchange between districts should be the same, they are often not. So while we try to exchange that information, oftentimes it comes in a paper form rather than an electronic form. One of the benefits of what has been conceived and now created here is the standardization of those data elements so that we can exchange that data uniformly between different districts.
So you're getting double-sized eggs when you ask for double-sized egg, not a single egg.
Vice Chair Comp, that is exactly correct.
Go ahead.
And in reality, there are a number of districts who now have exactly the same software and are in agreements that they can transfer that pretty directly.
Vice Chair Comp and Representative Roblin, let me give you a real life example, if I could, from our own district experience. Portland Public Schools and Multnomah ESD, as well as Clackamas Educational Service District, currently all participate in a single data instance of a student information system. And while we can exchange data literally instantaneously by pointing to a different record, Beaverton has that identical system. I cannot exchange data with Beaverton. The definitions are different. And even actually within Clackamas, MESD, and Portland Public, there are slight differences.
Okay.
So while we're close, we're not exact.
Sure,
go ahead, because all of us have questions. No, you first.
It strikes me as being odd that, I mean, whenever I've dealt with data warehouses of these, and I have on several different occasions in developing them and working with them, while the information in that central storage unit might be stripped, it has a unique identifier, and not the name and address, somewhere there needs to be an index that identifies that unique number with a real person. Are you saying you don't have that kind of an index there?
Vice Chair Comp, Representative Greenman, no, we are not saying that. But what we're trying to do is mask the identity of the individual students in that warehouse so that when others have access to that, they don't know who Johnny is or where Johnny lives or any of that.
But you can find out who John J. Jones is
by
matching out of an index into that.
Right.
Okay. Now I understand.
Okay.
Go ahead, Representative Rubin. Because I forgot my question.
I guess one last question that you brought up, that Hills, different school districts have the same software package. They do different definitions. There are a number of states who actually went to the point of contracting out, getting a package and having it for the whole state, so that a small school district and a big school district all had the opportunity to have the same basic vendor. We made a choice not to do that in our state, as it appears. And so we've got lots of different vendors, all of whom have to have something in common to share information, and that's what the state's trying to do here. There's times when I think we should have gone to the other vendor way, but that's an issue, that's a policy issue that we didn't make at the state level and didn't help school districts out with it at all. So is that not kind of the case right now?
Vice Chair Comp and Representative Roblin, there are certainly different routes to the same end, if you will. And while we have made a number of efforts, certainly at the grassroots level, to try to roll up a student systems to get more common rather than less common, so that's been a great facilitator of data exchange. To do that on a statewide level from the basis upon which we were 2 years ago even, or 3 years ago, was an extremely cost prohibitive exercise, I think, conclusion that everyone got to. What we are executing on today underneath the umbrella of the KIDS project is a very cost-effective way to get there.
So to summarize this slide, there are two pieces that are unique or that you need to know about the KIDS infrastructure. One is the student or the data warehouse in the middle that allows us to create these reports for policymakers. The other is the ability to move data around the enterprise when kids move from district to district. They don't have to go out, grab those paper transcripts, make copies of them, put them in envelopes, and ship them off. So what the OSTX is this is the student exchange gateway. This is the mechanism to move the student records. And just in summary, it really reduces district workloads. It reduces the archiving requirements, the storage of the paper records, and the timing to get kids' data to the instructors. The one thing that I've heard loud and clear from teachers is when Johnny drops into my classroom, I need to know immediately whether he or she has an IEP, whether he's had truancy problems, attendance problems, or how he's doing in school so we can appropriately place Johnny. This is an example, if you think back to the centerpiece, the data warehouse of the different report families, and I'm going to give you an example of each one of these. The first is a dashboard, and a dashboard basically gives you a dashboard type of report that says whether we're in good shape or we're in trouble or we need work in different areas. And then we have a whole bunch of different types of reports, much like the DBI.
Can I come ask about the dashboard?
We're going to show you one in a
second. Yeah, please, Representative.
I'll wait till you get there.
Okay. So the different types of report families that we've got are school profiles, student profiles, enrollment and attendance. You know, you just go down the list. Anything about students we'll be able to generate a report off of. Here's an example of a dashboard that we've got programmed. And this one, I apologize for the lack of clarity in it, but it's an attendance. I believe this is an attendance dashboard. And if you look on in the middle row where there's the gray and the yellow, that's actually red, yellow, green. but it's not showing up on the projector just right. And that shows you where we're at in terms of student attendance in general at a high level. If you move over to the middle section, that shows the makeup of the student population for that district that's being discovered. So, and then in the middle, you've got a gender. So then you can drill in at that point to any variation you want. You can do it by school plus grade, by district, whatever grouping that you want. And the end users can actually set where that gauge it becomes red, yellow, or green. So that's an end user defined process. I'll stop there.
Yes. Go ahead, Representative Greenland.
Yeah, I think it's easy to underestimate how data phobic end users are in these kind of systems. And I've seen some very interesting human factors research that have led to dashboards that are much more user friendly than this pretty complex dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the problem of the airline pilots, I'm sure you've heard about, is that they have 50 gauges in front of them, and they all have different scales and different meanings. And one of the things that the human factors folks created was a model that normal on every gauge is straight up. And there are 50 gauges, and they're all straight up. And at a glance, you can see if anything is deviating from the straight up, and focus on that without having to interpret each of the gauges, if you will, on the dashboard individually by itself. And I was just wondering if you've been thinking about ways to make that equivalent. Things that when something screws up, it really hits you. You don't have to figure it out when it's out of whack, is it?
Excuse me, Vice Chair Comp, Representative Greenlick. Again, speaking from the district level for a moment, if I could. In Portland's regional instance that we've created, where we have a dashboard as well, which focuses on indicators that the district is tracking for school improvement planning purposes, as well as overall district improvement plans, those indicators that you're referring to, we've taken a very simplistic stoplight approach, if you will. Most people are familiar with, you know, identifying with green, you go, yellow, caution, and red, you better stop and take a very good look. So the current focus of that dashboard effort is to create indicators which have thresholds identifying green, yellow, and red. So that while they don't, while certainly all those indicators are there, that dashboard is there, as the airline pilot would have, they only really need to look at the ones that are red and yellow to focus in on, and at that point, they can drill in to a deeper level of analysis for each of those red and yellows.
Yeah, that's the point I was trying to make.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we getting to the point in this project that an individual teacher can go drill all the way down to their individual classroom?
Before you make a comment, I love you, man.
I mean, because if we're really going to ever use this data, in my opinion, to inform instruction, those are the people who need to have the information. It has to be that kind of dashboard that says, here's where we're at. And I know that that's part of the end of this, but are there practitioners who are part of the project?
Vice Chair Comp, Representative Roblin, again, if I could speak from the district perspective for just a moment. In terms of the dashboard execution that we have done, it's built on the same platform, if you will, that the kids project's been executed on. We have that detail available by school, by teacher. So they have the ability to look at individual teachers, students in their classroom, as well as by special program status and so on. The way we have used that for the most part is to have instructional improvement teams at the building level working with the entirety of the instructional staff so that we begin to embrace sort of that culture of data-driven decision-making at a building level for school improvement planning purposes before we turn it loose, if you will, on an individual instructor. So they see it, they're involved in it, but we're trying to do it in a team-oriented approach in which they're looking at the school's performance and individual instructors, but as a team.
So Representative Comp and or Vice Chair Comp and Representative Roblin, just to add on to Scott's comments, I think it's important for you to understand that part of what Phase 3 will bring about is the enterprise licensing for these types of tools so that every student, every district has access to them. The department cannot get access to a single teacher. School. I mean, our job is to build the infrastructure to get the tools available so that everybody has access to it. So in addition to the four pilots that we have, we also have two ESDs that are building similar data warehouses, regional data warehouses to support them. Part of what Phase 3 does is we would negotiate the enterprise-wide licenses and find out how many more of these regional warehouses need to be built so that all kids have access to that and that all teachers are served with that information.
Well, my follow-up question is from the foundation that the department has, and then what did you have, what kind of skills or what did you have to do to take and synthesize this to bring it to the school level so that the school improvement team could do it? I mean, does it take somebody that nearly has or has a PhD in technology to do this, or is it going to be something that every district will be able to handle?
Vice Chair Comp, in fact, I would argue that based on real-world experience, if you will, within the districts, that it is not a technology issue. It is the opposite. It's a business process issue, if you will, in terms of how you engage in the instructional community in a full-circle performance management process of looking at the current performance of students, looking at the alignment of the curriculum, evaluating the instructional intervention strategies, and tracking it and monitoring it as you go. That is a process that is more of a professional development exercise with school improvement coaches. The technology is a tool.
Okay.
It's simply a tool.
Have any of your schools that are using this designed any reports to go home to parents so parents can have a dashboard where their child's at?
Vice Chair Comp, we have not gone to the student level at this point in time in terms
of
the dashboard
work. I know you're at the very novice level of it.
However, I will say that is a current dialogue going on right now, and actually engaged an external contract party to work with us on that matter to actually get to a student level report for the parent.
Yeah. Well, you're doing a lot of good work.
My only other question about that one is that on the dashboards, will there be dashboards that also are related to assessment tools? So we've got the state assessment, we've got the scores, and we can build that one down. Because you can have a lot of these. If at the beginning of this whole process, from my perspective, all of our reports to the state were compliance reports. And the data that they got that was compliance report was very useless if it came back in any form to an individual teacher to do anything with respect to what they're doing. So it had the wrong purpose with respect to the delay. The state needed that, but it wasn't going to inform instruction. So on the converse side of that, we have a whole lot of information now because of the state testing that really is important, especially if you can break it down to the individual questions and know the kinds of things your kids are doing bad or good on so that you can say, oh, I must not have covered that. That's not necessarily real helpful for the state in any kind of compliance issue, but it's totally important for the individual teacher.
Yes. Representative or Vice Chair Comp, Representative Roblin, actually this project isn't going to solve that problem, but the new assessment system, the new TESA, is coming with a new reporting engine, which I believe does address your concerns about the individual results of students and providing that information in a more useful format.
One more thing.
Yes, and then Representative Buckley.
This is just a statement, because I have always been frustrated by people's need to have all this information so that they can maybe assess a teacher because of that. Mm-hmm. But I have not met a teacher who, when presented information that they can gather quickly that will help assess how they're doing so they can check themselves so they can do better with their kids. I have not found a teacher when that's presented there that hasn't been thankful for the opportunity to do it. And, you know, there are professionals out there who are really wanting to do the best they can for their kids. And when it's so difficult to get that information, they have a hard time. And so they go on what we've always gone on, which is our important information, our day-to-day interaction with those kids. But real data like this, I think the teachers are hungry for the opportunity to do that, to make themselves better. And they do a wonderful job, but we haven't given them very many tools to make that job easier.
depends on the input, though, doesn't it?
That's it totally depends on the input.
Well, and you're right, and the definitions and that consistency, so whatever in school A or B, if it means the same thing as school C. Representative Buckley.
Well, along those lines, Mr. Costa, you just mentioned the new TESA. What's the status?
Oh, you want to go there?
I do. I'd like to get a brief answer.
Vice Chair Comp, Chair Buckley, the status is that we are writing the manuals. They're doing the development. We're getting ready for user acceptance testing of the new product. There's a lot of training that needs to be done. We're still going through the requirements analysis, but we're on a pretty good track to get us up and running. We may not be up and running by September 1st. Historically, it's been the end of September when we first roll out. We may, because of testing issues, have to delay that 30 more days to the 1st of November. But we are on track to be open for testing this fall.
Very good. And can I ask a follow-up?
Please.
On the problems with the contractors, has that been resolved, or do you have any information on that?
Vice Chair Comp, Chair Buckley, the problems have not been resolved. We have taken depositions of some key players, and the attorneys are working on next steps, but it's still in court.
So there'll be a different contractor for the coming year?
Chair Buckley, there is a different contractor. American Institutes for Research is under contract, and that's what I referred to as the new TESA vendor.
And you did the RFPs for that in March, I believe.
We Vice Chair Comp, we actually did the RFPs for that last summer.
Oh, that's right.
AIR is doing that?
AIR is doing that.
Hard to beat that.
No.
In terms of the timeline for the kids, right now we have the four pilot projects. What's the timeline for going statewide?
The statewide project, Chair Buckley, the statewide implementation is due for 07-09. We intend to have every kid represented by a student warehouse, and long-term what that means is that's just the student information. In addition to the student information, we're going to look at 09-11 for staffing information and financial information to be potentially added, all off future stages of this kids project. But we want to stay focused on getting the student information available to everybody. There are going to be some huge policy questions that we'll be needing to bring to the legislature and state board about how we connect student and staff information. And we want to be sure we do the policy right before we build the architecture.
Yeah. That one's a critical one. Anything else, Doug?
Well, I think just in wrap-up, you've touched on many of these issues that we've laid out. Security, we have to deal with on a regular basis. We don't want to let anyone have access to these records. It's got to be very tight. Privacy, we need to do some policy work around the Oregon administrative rules that are in place, align those with FERPA, and review the electronic nature of moving these data and ensuring that we have checked all of our FERPA guidelines appropriately. Use is a big deal for the districts. How we use these data and how we report these data are incredibly important because they're reporting to us on a daily basis, and they would be not happy if we just started shoving information out to the internet and putting them on reports if we're using it for a purpose other than what they've intended it to be used for. Enterprise licensing to leverage state purchasing power is something we've heard loud and clear from the districts. Don't let us go off and buy these one-off. Let's form a cooperative and let the state purchase the licensing and get a better deal, because we all need these tools, and let's do it right this time so we don't repeat what we did with student information systems. Communication. Scott pointed out to me earlier that needs to be job number one. Put it at the top of the list. And then finally, end-user training. It's all about getting the end-users trained on this and ensuring that they understand how to use these appropriately and not misuse the data.
Well, you hit upon the question that I have, and that is, as I feel like I'm really out of the loop now being in the legislature for these 6 months we're in session, because I'll go back to a school district and they're using a whole different form of language. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, what are you guys talking about? It takes me about 6 weeks to catch up. But has some of this information gone out to school districts so they're starting to assimilate and think about how this could impact them, or you, yeah, what is the communication on the rollout?
Vice Chair Comp, the communication has been all about just getting the right players to the table. We have quarterly IT managers, information technology managers meetings, and we have assessment advisory committee meetings, so they're notified of what we're doing. Primarily, most districts know, and they're waiting for us to figure out where we're going with the next phase of this. And all of the technology folks throughout the state have been kind of tuned into this project because of that.
Okay.
The staff probably don't know as much about it, and that's going to be the tricky part.
Right. Well, and the part that having IT people know, and you said another...
Assessment folks.
The assessment folks... frequently, sometimes they don't have the, there's usually only one or two of those in a district compared to 20 administrators, and they get outweighed and they get pushed to the bottom of the agenda. And so frequently, even though a superintendent or certain district directors are very well informed, the people in the buildings haven't heard it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Regretfully, but that's just how when you have 20 principals and only one IT specialist at the table.
Vice Chair Comp, I couldn't agree with you more, and that's why it's on the list that we need to do a better job of communicating. As part of our governing board, the group that kind of guided us down this process, we've included COSA, OSBA, and OEA so that they're in the loop. We're at the point where we need to do a mass marketing or notification of folks where we're at with this. We were concerned about it during the pilot because we didn't want to get the excitement going too far and get everybody ahead of us, and we needed to pretty much manage their expectations. But at this point, I think we're ready.
I'm going to ask you a real tough question because the COSA Administrative Conference is going on right now today and tomorrow on Saturday. Did any one of your pilot schools or anybody do a workshop?
Vice Chair Comp, not at this one, but we have done them in the past for the COSA conferences so that they're aware of them.
Yeah. Well, you just know that that conference right now is the one that most principals or school people attend because the rest of the time they're in their offices in the school year, that's a prime time for communique.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in summary, Scott, do you have anything further to add from a district perspective?
Vice Chair Comp, I guess I'd just like to make one brief tie back to this project that puts it maybe in a different perspective, which is that while this sort of looks like a very interesting technology initiative and so on, it's really about dealing with every student by name and the ability to deal with mobility that we're facing in our districts in Oregon. Mm-hmm. Is tremendous in terms of being able to get this data to the districts, to the school building, to the teacher, placing the correct student in the right program at the right time to have the right intervention strategies to have student success. So while it looks sort of like a very high-level initiative, it's about the kids, and that's the most important facet of going in the right direction that I see relative to this particular initiative.
Well, and I thank you for that because as being a school principal, when you have a student in particular that has language needs or special ed needs, or the one that really gets the short end is our talented and gifted student that's identified, but nobody even asks, well, you look too normal, if you have any problems. And so then frequently, I mean, sometimes it's up to 3 weeks before you'll get the special ed CUM file. 3 weeks, and you hope that you've understood from a counselor or somebody what the plan is, that you have placed the child appropriately. And it is very difficult if you we did this with the levels of our second language learners. You think they're at one level by a quick assessment, and you put them at that level and you find out, oh, they're down here. And so the child gets frustrated, disheartened in 2 weeks of...
And now you have 8 or 10 kids with all sorts of different special needs in one of those classrooms rather than...
And exactly, because that used to be more clustered in 2 or 3 types of of children, and now it's, well, as we know, we have done a much better job of defining what their needs are, and we need to, the sooner we know that, the better off everybody is. Well, I thank you for your time, because I know you're busy in the committee, to just get a little bit more of an insight to what's happening, and it is pretty exciting. So,
thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Greenlick, the only thing we have on the agenda was a discussion of possible topics for committee work during the interim. And did you have any thoughts you'd want to share in public?
I do indeed. As I was saying before, I obviously have interest in this question of OHSU, PSU, but the much more important question is the whole issue of how we deal with the universities and the university system. I mean, there are going to be more proposals like this. I know the Board of Higher Education is working on a strategic plan. I don't know what the time frame is for that strategic plan, but there is under the radar interest in moving PSU, OSU, and OHSU at least out of the state system for business purposes, if not for educational coordination. I mean, that's always been sort of roaming around. People have managed to keep the lid on that. If there were proposals for something like that to happen, what would happen to the other four? Would we be talking about spinning off all seven? It would seem to me we're not giving universities enough money, so we do need to give them the freedom to be entrepreneurial on their own right, but that also means that they get out of the protection of a system. I mean, it seems to me this whole question of how to differentiate, how to balance giving the universities freedom to be entrepreneurial and to manage their affairs in a way they want to, but still deal with the integration of education within our state at the higher education level, seems to me an important question. I'm not sure that I'm framing it very clearly, but I think the future of university education in this state is a very critical issue, and how we build as much innovation into that at the system level seems to me important. And I mean, it was very interesting for those of you that read the report that we distributed from the consultants, that the second part of that report, in talking about just PSU and OHSU and dreaming about how you might create a research class university in the Portland metropolitan area, you can imagine, and that's only 10 or 12 pages long, but you can imagine that same kind of discussion about the role of other universities, the role of regional universities, and what sort of innovation we can get through. So I think that would be a really interesting topic.
I think we could check with the Board of Higher Ed to see when their strategic plan is due, and if they are planning on releasing it, to have them do a presentation for us, it'd be a minimal step to take. Appreciate that. The other members have communicated either with Representative Cobb or myself on issues ranging from drug and alcohol prevention programs in the schools, the virtual school district, which we've heard a lot about, and how we're going to address those in the future. The review of the funding formula, accountability measures. And again, it doesn't look like we're going to get the chalkboard project view of the not the accountability side, but the collaborative, education collaborative. So those are some of the other items that have been mentioned.
Yeah, we might also look at the bills that we passed out that ended up in, we just missed,
in
ended
ways
up buried in Ways and Means. Other
well,
questions.
And
yeah,
see if there's refinements
yeah.
or.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Anything else? Any other ideas? If not, we will adjourn this hearing.